Well, good morning. I certainly appreciate the opportunity to be here at Colorado State University. This is an opportunity for us to have a very interesting and somewhat complicated conversation about two very important aspects of what we'll discuss here today. One has to do with the GPSA rules that USDA has promulgated and is in the comment period. We will assume that all of the comments relating to GPSA will be part of the official record and included as part of the comments, which will, I think, further instruct us as we make final determinations about the GPSA rules. At the same time, we're also here to talk about consolidation and competition, consistent with the other hearings that we've had in the other three locations. And so it's going to be an interesting conversation. I think it'll sort of, at times, sort of bleed into one another. But we'll obviously have both conversations because there's a great deal of interest in both topics. Turn it over to the Attorney General, and then we'd be glad to answer any questions. General?
Well, I think I'd simply say that, you know, we're glad to be here. This is a, I guess, the fourth in a series of conversations that we're having with people in the agricultural industry. I think this shows a historic partnership between the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Justice. And we think that this partnership is going to result in better agricultural policy, a more robust enforcement activity by our antitrust division, led by Christine Barney. And this will help us and help inform us when we are in the process of deciding where and how the Department of Justice should act. So with that, I'm more than glad to respond to any questions that you all might have.
Yes, sir.
Secretary Vilsack, is there something fundamentally wrong, something broken, with the American beef industry when 4 out of 5 steaks at the supermarket come from only 4 packing houses?
I think that's what this discussion and hearing is about, is to determine how the producers, the cattle producers, feel about the current status. I will tell you that we have concerns about the overall system, the entire system. When we look at the fact that in 1980 there were 1,600,000 cattle producers in this country, populating rural America, helping to create and support small businesses in rural America, and now we see that there are 950,000 cattle producers. So we've lost hundreds of thousands of producers. We see the same thing in hogs. We see the same thing in dairy. And I think that's one of the reasons why we decided to have these hearings and conversation to determine whether or not we could glean from the producers, from those who are in the industry, what the difficulties are, what the challenges are, and what the solutions might be. I'm deeply concerned about this, not just for its impact on agriculture, but as was stated earlier, on its impact on the entire rural economy. When you take a look at the trends in rural America, the depopulation of counties, the aging nature of the population, the fact that the workforce has as many high school dropouts as college graduates, the difference in per capita income between rural residents and urban and suburban residents, all of this suggests that we really do need, as a country, to pay more attention to what's going on those farms, on those ranches, in those small communities, to determine how we might be able to make them profitable so we can return to a point where young people have a chance in this business. So, you know, I can't tell you today that I know precisely what the solution is, but I know that we can't continue these trends, because if we do, we're going to end up with a handful of farmers, a handful of packers, a handful of processors, and a handful of grocery stores. And at that point, I think the consumers will suffer as well. Yes?
Mr. Secretary, it sometimes seems at these workshops that the view is that competition and antitrust issues are the whole problem with rural development and the loss of young people. Can you address what your view is on that issue?
Well, I don't think it would be fair to read into these hearings that we believe that this is all that we need to focus on. I will tell you that what the Obama administration has done for the first time in my lifetime is to put together a framework that I believe can help revitalize the rural economy. We talked about broadband earlier today. There are enormous opportunities for farmers and ranchers to benefit from broadband access because they'll have real-time information about weather and markets, which will allow them to make more informed decisions about their operations. It also helps small businesses who are niche be able to expand their markets from local markets and regional markets to global markets. It encourages better health care because now family docs will have access to specialists without patients having to travel hundreds of miles to tertiary care centers, and it will absolutely improve rural education because it will expand rural schools' capacity to offer more courses. That's part of it. The new energy opportunities that this state and other states are taking advantage of, tremendous opportunities in expanding the biofuel industry, opportunities to expand significantly renewable energy and see capital investments in rural communities and job growth. That's part of it. The discussion that the governor mentioned about the connection between local consumers. It's not just export markets we have to expand. We also have to make a better connection between local producers and local consumers. Schools, hospitals, institutional purchasers of food ought to know what's being grown and raised in their area, in their region, and ought to be able to contract directly with those producers. Or at least we ought to have a supply chain that's local, creating jobs and additional market opportunities for those producers and additional competition for what they're growing and raising. It's about conservation and doing a better job of utilizing conservation to enhance outdoor recreation, which is an enormous economic opportunity in terms of tourism to revitalize rural communities. Just a national forest. We have 193 million acres of forest and grasslands. 173 million people spend time in a national forest on an annual basis. Are we capturing every opportunity to access more economic opportunity from those 173 million visitors or the 300 million who pass by a national forest on their way to some other place? Ecosystem markets, the ability to compensate farmers and ranchers for the use of their land for societal benefits. There was a discussion here about water issues today. We're beginning to see water credits, potentially carbon credits, an opportunity for more capital to come into rural America. So that's one piece of it. There's the credit piece, the need for commercial banks to work with us to provide affordable credit. Credit is tight now, very difficult for a lot of producers. And we're seeing a dramatic increase in our programs at guarantee loans and direct loans. So we have to have a functioning credit system. That's part of it. The export markets is part of it. What we're here today to talk about is part of it. So, I mean, there are a multitude of issues here that have to be addressed. And the thing about USDA that I don't think is fully appreciated is that we're actually in each one of those spaces, and we're aggressively pursuing them. Well, there has been, just so everyone knows, I don't want to comment on the specifics of this, but because of the nature of the fact we're in the comment period, but let me just simply say that during the debate of the 2008 Farm Bill, there were over 200 organizations that suggested the need for a review of and a more definitiveness in terms of the Packers and Stockyards Act and in terms of what constitutes undue preferences and unfair practices. We have, during the course of the rural tour that I took last year, 21, 22 different stops, town hall meetings in each of those stops in rural communities, listening to producers express concern about the relationships that they have. We have had thousands of comments in preparation of the poultry rule that was finalized in December of last year and this current rule. So many comments that we extended the comment period. So we are going to have a good understanding and appreciation for precisely what will or will not happen. I know that there's a lot of concern on the part of some, and there's a lot of misunderstanding on the part of some as to the reach or the extent of these rules. And I think what the additional comment period will provide and the additional opportunities we will have to educate people about what the final rules are hopefully will clarify and calm folks down.
Do you think, though, that the debate and division within the cattle industry over the rule overshadows maybe the conversation you might have wanted to have today on just overall competition issues?
Not necessarily, Chris, not necessarily. I think we're going to hear a lot of information today from a variety of producers on a variety of issues. Clearly, this will be part of what will be discussed. This is going to better inform the ultimate decisions that we have to make in this area. We have an act that was passed 70-some years ago that really has not been looked at in great detail for quite some time, and we have a direction from the Congress to more refine and define undue practices and undue preferences and so forth. So I don't think this conversation is a bad thing. I think it's a helpful thing. And, you know, I think intertwined in that, there's going to be conversation about, you know, the relative value that the producer gets, that the packer gets, that the producer, that the retail folks get. We're going to extend that conversation in December in Washington, D.C., as we look at the fairness of the overall system. So I'm not concerned about that. We want people to have a conversation. We want this kind of activity to take place because I think it will educate all of us.
Will you be regulating or enforcing in such a way that packers have to bid for livestock in the open public market?
I don't really want to talk about specifics because I think it would be inappropriate for me to comment on what we're ultimately going to do because we haven't decided ultimately that. We want to give people the chance to comment and then have those comments shape what our final decision is. In the back. Well, I think what we heard today, artfully said by virtually every panelist, is that this is a delicate balance. And what we're going to try to do is to make sure that if there is an imbalance, that we recalibrate. And if we recalibrate, do we do it in a way that doesn't necessarily result in harming a market that we want to function? The Congress directed us to do this. The Act has not been looked at for quite some time, and it's fairly clear that the world has changed since the Act was enacted, and we are seeing these trends that I'm deeply concerned about. If you ask what frame I use, it's a very simple frame. I want to be able to have mothers and fathers, grandfathers and grandmothers be able to speak to their children and their grandchildren at a coffee table, on the farm, on the ranch, and basically talk about the real opportunity that they have to take over the operation. Or that some kid in a small town who thinks it would be really great to be a farmer or rancher whose parents are working in the local grocery store or teaching at the local high school actually has a chance to do that. I don't know that that's the America that we have today. I know that's the America we ought to have, because if we have a strong and vibrant rural America, we're going to have a strong and vibrant nation. I am convinced of that. Jerry?
Yes. For you, Secretary Vilsack, and the Attorney General.
Oh, good.
he can answer first. He said you first.
I've had executives in the meat and dairy industry say that ultimate problem here is the pressure that comes from the retailers, particularly from Walmart, to provide meat and dairy products as cheaply as possible to them. But they also wonder in this process whether you will really take on the issues of the retailers and particularly Walmart, because they say Walmart is so big and that you might be afraid of them. Will you be taking on Walmart in this process?
Well, I don't think we want to prejudge the outcome of our conversations in December or the evaluation that we take after having all five of these hearings. I don't think it's a matter of taking anybody on. At least from my perspective, it's a matter of making sure that the marketplace is fair, and particularly fair to the person who is out there putting a good deal of capital at risk, the farmer and the rancher, and absolutely spending a substantial amount of labor, intensive, hard work labor to produce a product that we're proud not only to consume here in the United States, but also very proud to be able to export around the world. So to me, that's my focus. I want to make sure that that man or woman, that farmer or rancher, is just getting a fair shake. And, you know, from what we hear as we travel around the country, there are many who perceive they're not getting a fair shake. So that's the purpose of these hearings.
Yeah, and I say from our perspective, we don't think about this in terms of taking anybody on. We think about our role as enforcers of the law. And in that regard, we will be firm. We will be aggressive. But we will also be realistic in understanding what the impact is of our actions. And so I think what Christine has talked about, I think very eloquently in this and in other forums, is that with regard to our antitrust efforts, we are realistic. You know, big is not necessarily bad. Our focus is to make sure that the marketplace is fair and that we do things, I think, that are consistent with what this president has focused on and this Secretary of Agriculture in particular has focused on. How do we strengthen rural America? All of these are the kinds of things that go into our enforcement policies.
Yes, sir.
All the discussions that we've heard in the last, well, since yesterday and through on, and all the emails that, that we've all been getting, have focused on, you know, one viewpoint versus another viewpoint as to how these proposed rules are going to actually play out when the rubber meets the road in the country. That you can have very learned lawyers on both sides coming to entirely different conclusions after reading the entire the same thing.
I'm shocked to hear that.
Yeah, I am too.
But given the disparity of opinions and the uncertainty that's going on in the industry about these rules and the vagueness of the way of interpreting them as to how they're actually going to play out, do you see a large rewriting of these rules when it comes out to the final rule, or even having them pulled for maybe reemergence sometime later down the road?
Well, I certainly respect your desire to have me opine about the rules, which I'm not going to do. That's why you have a comment period, and it would be violating the notion of having a comment period and being open to people's attitudes and views so that you can ultimately be better informed and provide a better set of rules. Our goal here is to make sure that the rules that we promulgate are as good as they can be and provide that fairness and that transparency that we've talked about, which I think virtually everybody is interested in having. Will it be easy to get there? Perhaps not. But that doesn't mean that we don't have an obligation to get there.
We have time for one more question.
Go ahead. You were bold enough to stand up.
Yeah. I'm from a small daily newspaper in northwestern South Dakota. My question is, how many complaints have you received from producers in your agencies that relate to coercion, either positive or negative?
You mean, I want to make sure I understand your question. How many people have contacted us to suggest that they've not been treated fairly, or that they've been? Well, when we went to the poultry hearing in Normal, Alabama, we heard quite a few incidences of that. Christine may be able to amplify on that as well. We heard quite a few concerns that were expressed, in which people were essentially told to go out and borrow money and build a facility with the understanding that they'd have a long-term contract that would satisfy their banker that they had sufficient repayment capacity, only to find that at some point in that long-term contract it transitioned from a five- or long-term year contract, multi-year contract, to a flock-by-flock 90-day contract, which then concerned the banker, which then created a lot of pressure on the producer. We heard a good many of those stories, and we heard many stories of folks who because of their relationship were reluctant to speak for fear that they would be retaliated against. So I think that the answer to, I don't know the specific number as I speak here, we can try to find that out for you, but I think it was fairly, the stories were fairly consistent, and there were multiple stories.
At the Department of Justice, you know, we don't comment on ongoing investigations to confirm or deny, but I think I can say that consistent with what the Secretary just told you, at every workshop we've been to, we have had farmers and producers and growers come up to us and tell us about the problems that they face. In every instance, we have followed up. We have a task force between USDA and DOJ, where I have assigned, I think, about 15 lawyers from the DOJ to work with the USDA, to work with the folks on that end that get the complaints. We, so far, run down every complaint that we get, but I don't want to comment on what results in an investigation or not. I can tell you it's keeping many people very busy. So we are hearing from a lot of folks.
Thank you all.
Thank you all.
Hey, one question on the egg recall. Are there going to be any charges or any action against the egg companies?
Let me just say this. We can't comment on any, whether or not an investigation has been opened or not. I can tell you this, that I am very concerned about the reports that I have read with regard to the production of these eggs. We are determined to make sure that we protect the health of the American people and to prevent these kinds of things from happening in the future. So I think that is about as far as I can go at this point.
Thank you.